We're in lesson number 15 in the book of 1 Samuel, and I invite you to open your Bibles to chapter number 10 in 1 Samuel. We have, at this point in the story, as we ended in the last lesson, Samuel has Saul right where he wants him, standing outside of Samuel's house on the road. Samuel has just anointed him with oil and made him king. He has kissed him, and he's now telling him four instructions. We talked about two of them last week. First of all, he was going to pass by the tomb of Rachel, and there he was going to find two men who would tell him that his father's donkeys have been returned. Not to worry about that, but his father has become concerned about him and what is happening with him and taking him so long. Then, if you remember, but just a minute, Rachel's tomb is just a few hundred feet down outside of the town of Ramah. Ramah is going to be renamed later on Bethlehem. It's the place where Jesus would be born. It was the hometown of Samuel. And so just a little ways outside, whenever Rachel died giving birth to Benjamin, Benjamin was the 12th son of Jacob, was one of the sons that the tribes was named after, the tribe of Benjamin, of which Saul was a member of the tribe of Benjamin. And they would, and she would be buried there. Jacob placed a stone there as a memorial for her. Moses tells us that at the time of him writing the book of Genesis, that, which was time during the Exodus, by the way, that that stone was still there. 400 years after the birth of Jesus, they will come in and they will build a temple-like little thing like I showed you last week. Here's another picture of it right now. Where Rachel's tomb, what it looked like. Now, if you go look at it today, it has got a huge wall and barricade, razor wire and everything that you can think of to protect it around it. But, and it stood for now since the 400s A.D., 400 years after the birth of Jesus. The second thing that Samuel tells Saul is he's going to move on his way home to the Oak of Tabor. Oak of Tabor, as I told you, means the Oak of Weeping. It is the place where Deborah was buried. Not Deborah the judge, but Deborah the nurse of Rebekah, the mother of Jacob. Rebekah and Isaac. Rebekah's nurse, her maid, was named Deborah. She died and they buried her. Isaac buried and Rebekah buried her at the Oak of Tabor. Well, there at the Oak of Tabor, Saul was going to run into three men and they were going to greet Saul when he came to the Oak of Tabor and they would give him two loaves of bread and he was to accept them from their hands and to eat them on their way. Well, that comes down to the third thing, which is the opening of our lesson where we are here today, chapter 10, verse number 5. The next thing that Samuel said that Saul was going to see was a group of prophets. Verse number 5, chapter 10. Afterwards, you will come to the hill of God where the Philistine garrison is, and it shall be as soon as you have come out to the city that you will meet a group of prophets coming down from the high place with harp, tambourine, flute, and a lyre before them, and they will be prophesying. Then the Spirit of the Lord will come upon you mightily, and you shall prophesy with them and be changed into another man. And it shall be when these signs come to you, do for yourself what the occasion requires, for God is with you. Wow. Now, where was the hill of God? The Hebrew word for the hill of God is Gibeah Elohim. Gibeah Elohim. It is the hill of Elohim, located, guess where, in Gibeah, which is the hometown of Saul, hometown of his father Kish. So more than likely, the name Gibeah Elohim was the old name for the high place where it was controlled by the Canaanites, where they used to worship there way before Israel took it for their own to be part of the promised land, and it became the capital of the tribal area of Benjamin. There on the hill, Saul would find a group of prophets having the religious time of their life. And there the Lord would come upon Saul, and he would join them in prophesying the word of God. Now, there, Saul would be changed by the Lord into the man he needed to be the Lord's human king of Israel. These three signs would be presented in the exact order and circumstances to prove to Saul that what Samuel had told him and why Samuel had consecrated him to be the king, that it was all true. But there was one last instruction from Samuel to Saul. He was to go to Gilgal and wait for a week, 7 days, verse number 8. And you shall go down before me to Gilgal. And behold, I will come down to you to offer burnt offerings and to sacrifice peace offerings. And you shall wait 7 days until I come to you and show you what you should do. It was the final instruction of the four instructions from Samuel that morning that Samuel consecrated, anointed Saul to be the king. What could be so hard with these instructions? Now, on the way out of Ramah, all Saul had to do was walk. He was to walk by Rachel's tomb, and two men would approach him. He was to walk by the oak of Tabor, and three men would be ready to give him a meal. He was to walk on home. And at home, the prophets would be already there on the hill of God, worshiping joyous, joyous worship. Then, not to mention here, but it would transpire that after checking in with his father, he would go and walk on to Gilgal and wait a week for Samuel to arrive. What could be easier? Saul had his marching orders from Samuel. It was time to leave Ramah. And as he turned to leave Samuel, the transformation of this Benjamite by the name of Saul occurred in a heartbeat. God changed him in a heartbeat. Verse number 9. Then it happened when he turned his back to leave Samuel, God changed his heart. And all those signs came about on the day. And when they came to the hill there, behold, a group of prophets met him. And the Spirit of God came upon him mightily, so that he prophesied among them. It came about when all who knew him previously saw that he prophesied now with the prophets, that the people said to one another, "What has happened to the son of Kish? Is Saul also among the prophets?" A man there said, "Now, who is their father?" Therefore, it became a proverb, "Is Saul among the prophets?" And when he had finished prophesying, he came to the high place. All Saul's old friends saw and heard the differences in him. He was a changed man. He was changed by the Lord. He was a chosen man to begin with. Now he had the heart to be the king of Israel. If you remember, in those days, the priests were the ultimate authorities in the nation of Israel. And behind the priests were the prophets of the Lord. Chosen by the authority of the Lord with the ultimate authority over the nations. And these prophets of the Lord proclaimed the word of God to the people. And finally, the special judges came on next. And they would judge the people. They were identified by the Lord to be the judges, and they would judge and protect the people from the surrounding nations. Saul could not be a priest because he was not a Levite, but he could be a prophet. And even though Samuel was a Levite, and Samuel was a prophet, and Samuel was a judge, that was unusual. And in most cases, the judge were set in place by this magistrate system that was organized by Moses in the last month of his life there at the plains of Moab for the management of civil issues in the Promised Land. Not religious issues, but civils. We're talking about the Deborah the judge, the Barak the judge. We're talking about Jephthah the judge and Gideon the judge. These judges could have been from any tribe whatsoever. And the prophets could also be from any tribe whatsoever. The only requirement for a prophet was this: if he says, "Thus saith the Lord," it better happen. Because if it did not come true, he was a false prophet and to be shunned and other things to happen to him. For Saul to prophesy truth, it was a sign to the people of the Lord that the Lord was upon him in a great and a mighty, mighty way. There in his hometown, there began this investigation of Saul the Benjamite, and it occurred with Saul's uncle who came to question him. The investigation of Saul, verse number 14. Now Saul's uncle said to him and his servant, "Where did you go?" And he said, "To look for the donkeys. When we saw that they could not be found, we went to Samuel." Now Saul's uncle said, "Please tell me what Samuel said to you." So Saul said to his uncle, "He told us plainly that the donkeys had been found, but he did not tell him about the matter of the kingdom which Samuel had mentioned." He just told him about the donkeys and none of the rest of this. The part about Saul's journey to find his father's donkey, that was easy to explain, folks. But all his uncle had to do was question his brother, Kish, Saul's father, find out if that's true. Donkeys had been found. But for the rest of what had happened to Saul, it would be hard to explain to his uncle. Wisely, Saul sought to keep those things quiet to himself. Now we have to wonder if Samuel told Saul to keep these things quiet in confidence at that consecration place. But perhaps the Lord indwelt in the prophecy, new prophesying ability of Saul to have that wisdom to keep his mouth shut about what was going on during that prophesying time there on the hill of God. I choose to believe it was Saul who the Lord told during the time of his prophesying, "You keep this quiet for just a little bit." But I may be wrong. Well, at this point in the story, Saul was to walk on to Gilgal and to wait 7 days for Samuel to arrive to tell him what to do. But the writer does not continue this storyline at this time in the life of Saul as king. The writer will pick up the story of Saul going to Gilgal later in chapter 13 when Saul made a terrible mistake at the beginning of his rule by not waiting for Samuel for the 7 days. Well, this writer jumps ahead in the storyline to what occurred after the Gilgal meeting. This story that we're here about to look at deals with Samuel leading the nation to select Saul as king at Mizpah. It will be the story of the introduction of Saul to the entire nation of Israel. And the story begins with the summons of the tribes of Israel to Mizpah in verse number 17. Now, did you catch what I just said? This story skips Saul waiting for Samuel for 7 days and then doing something before Samuel gets there. Because this story, the writer is concerned about telling us the full story of how Saul was accepted by the people to be the king of Israel. But not on Saul's mistake. He'll pick up on that over in chapter 13. So in verse 17 of chapter 10, it says this: "Thereafter, Samuel called the people together to the Lord at Mizpah. And he said to the sons of Israel, 'Thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, I brought Israel up from Egypt, and I delivered you from the hand of the Egyptians and from the power of all the kingdoms that were oppressing you. But you have today rejected your God, who delivers you from all your calamities and your distresses, yet you have said, no, but set a king over us. Now therefore present yourselves before the Lord by your tribes and by your clans. This verse starts off with the word thereafter, verse 17. And it's extremely important to this verse. It literally means that the call of the people to meet Samuel at Mizpah happened after Saul met the two men at Rachel's tomb, the three men at the Oak of Tabor, the prophesying saints there at the hill of God, and had waited and not waited for 7 days after the debacle there at Gilgal when Samuel arrives late and Saul didn't wait to do something. So that story will pick up in chapter 13. So as stated, this story beginning here with verse number 17, verse 17 in chapter 10, jumps over the Gilgal and Saul Samuel story to share how the people came to accept Saul as their king at a meeting at Mizpah. Now, as the Lord correctly did through Samuel, He chastised the nation of Israel and instructed them as to how to proceed of selecting the king and how it occurred that day, even though He had already consecrated Saul to be their king. So the first step in revealing Saul, who had already been consecrated as the new king, was the selection of one of the 12 tribes. And it's going to end up with Benjamin, verse number 20. Thus Samuel brought all the tribes of Israel near, and the tribe of Benjamin was taken by lot. Then he brought the tribe of Benjamin near by its families, and the Matric family was taken. Now listen, lots were cast in the process to select the tribe by the family of the tribe, the family of the tribes. Now the process of casting lots is used throughout the Bible, but unfortunately we never have an explanation as how the process was accomplished. Now I have some ideas about it, because remember we've got the priest hill all together, and they have this thing called the Urim and the Thummim that they wear on the front of the high priest's garment. And it has 12 stones on it. One color, each of the stones is a different color, a precious stone of a different color. And each stone, different color, represents a tribe. Okay? Now, when a question was asked of the Urim and Thummim that was on the priest's chest, such as, and we've already done this back in the book of Judges, so we'll think about it here. If they had asked the priest when the Urim and the Thummim to tell the answer to this, which tribe was to lead the Israelites in battle, well, what would happen in most cases, we found out the way the Lord said, it would be the tribe of Judah. So the stone of the tribe of Judah would light up and flash on the Urim and the Thummim. Nice, easy way to cast lots. Now, going on, let's say they were there at Jericho, and they asked the same question, which they did. Which tribe is to lead us around Jericho? And when they asked the tribe if they're casting the lots by with this Urim and Thummim, three stones would light up. Tribe of Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh. They would light up and flash. And so those were the tribes to lead. And those are the tribes that led. Okay, so that's a way of casting lots, to receive an answer from the Lord with the Urim and the Thummim. Now, be that as it may, without the Urim and the Thummim, each tribe, it was easy. They all had a stone or a standard or something, the color of their tribe. So all they had to do was put 12 of something, you know, one from each tribe in a bag or a bag, whatever, and draw one out. And that would be casting lots also. It was very easy in case the Urim and the Thummim wasn't being used. Well, whatever, however they did it, lo and behold, it came out as Benjamin's whatever. They also had, remember, these colors that they had were also the colors of their flags and their standards that they flew. So you always knew where to go when they were out in the wilderness, to where they looked for the standard of whatever the color their standard was, their flag, I should say. So that's probably the way it happened in selecting the tribe. But then how do they select the family? Well, then there were divisions in the family that split off. And as they split off, all they had to do was someone from each division just had to put in something. And they put in something when they selected out. It could have been a shoe. It could have been a belt. It could have been whatever. And probably everybody put in something different so that when it came out, they knew who it belonged to and who it was. And when they finally got down through the family, they got down to the family of the matriarch. Now listen. We have no clue as to the origin of this matriarch line in reality. But I think I have got it figured out, and there are some other scholars that can help with this too. And even though we don't have any clue about that, but on my part, I believe that this is a mistranslation simply because of Hebrew letters, reading the Hebrew letter wrong. The word matriarch probably should be Bektrix, I should say, or Bekrites, coming from the line of Becker or Beecher, however you want to spell it in English. When we harmonized back before the descendants of Benjamin to Saul in Genesis 46, 1 Samuel 14, 1 Chronicles 7, 1 Chronicles 8, 1 Chronicles 9, all along with this passage, where all these names, all these descendants are put together, we found out that the line from Benjamin to Saul was Benjamin, Becher, Aphish, Becherite, Zeror, Abiel, Ner, Kish, and then Saul. Okay, so I believe that that family line that was picked was Becher. So in this case, there would be no confusion as to the family which was chosen because Benjamin only had three sons. One was Bela, one was Becher, and one was Jadiel. So Saul was a descendant of Becher. Okay. Now, from the family of Matriarch, or I should say, or Becherite, Saul was chosen. So once you got down to Kish, it was easy because we only know that Kish had one son, and it was Saul. And verse 21a says, "And Saul, the son of Kish, was taken." The casting of lots for Saul had to be much harder when selected the tribe than the family. Than selecting the tribe, the family was harder. And then going on down to find which one of the families and which one of the clans it was, it even got even harder and harder and harder. But finally they got down to Kish. And once they got down to Kish, it was easy because it had to be Saul. Now, to our knowledge, Saul was the only male child of Kish. So once Kish was selected, Saul was the only one left, but Saul was missing. No, he wasn't missing. He was there. But we say Saul's missing. So why was Saul missing at Mizpah? He's not missing. Verse 21b says, "But when they looked for him, he could not be found." Where was Saul? Well, the writer tells us next. "But Saul was hiding in the crowd." Verse 22. "Therefore, they inquired further of the Lord, 'Has the man come here yet?' So the Lord said, 'Behold, he is hiding himself in the baggage.'" Now, no one knew where Saul was hiding, but the Lord did. You can't hide from the Lord. The Lord told them where to look. And no doubt the Lord was speaking to Samuel, who was there running the whole meeting. Well, we come to see Saul presented to the people in verse number 23. "So they ran and took him from there, and when he stood among the people, he was taller than any of the people from his shoulders up." All right. So, can you imagine in your mind's eye this scene? All the people of Israel had arrived at Mizpah for the meeting called by Samuel. And when they arrived, they were going to be there at least overnight and if not longer. And because the people were traveling from all over the promised land, when they got there, they had to bring their stuff. They had to bring their tents. They had to bring storage bags. They had to bring their food. They had to bring everything they needed. And some of the tribes were coming from more than 70 miles away. And even though they were meeting at Mizpah, and it was in the tribal area of Benjamin, even some of those Benjamite tribes, they could not go home for the night. It was too far for them. So we must wonder if each of these families had all their stuffs and their tents and their bags and their blankets and their food and everything all piled into baggage areas. I'm sure they were piled by tribal areas because that's just what they did. And that is where they found Saul and paraded him up the people. He was probably among the baggage of the people of Benjamin. And he was still taller than any other man in Israel. he could not be missed. Well, once Saul was presented, Samuel spoke, and we see Saul was accepted as the new king. Verse number 24. Samuel said to all the people, "Do you see him whom the Lord has chosen? Surely there is no one like him among all the people." So all the people shouted and said, "Long live the king." Well, long live the king. You see it there? Here in this passage, it is the first time we have heard these thoughts through the ages of the entire eternity of the Bible up to this point in time. It's never been said. No, I tell you what, it's probably been said. It's not going to be the last time we're going to hear it, but it's the first time we've heard it in the pages of our Bible. More than likely, it was not the first time that the Israelites had heard it, because they probably heard it over in Egypt when they said, "Long live the new king," talking about a Pharaoh and when he came to the throne. They may have heard it among the Canaanites all around them when they took the promised land. And perhaps they heard it among their Moabite and Ammonite cousins who had kings. Who knows? But what we do know is this. It was the first time that the nation of Israel used it for their own human king. So after the proclamation that Saul was the new king, Samuel had a story for these folks. He had a story and he had a sermon in verse 25a where Samuel told the people the ordinances of the kingdom and wrote them in a book and placed them before the Lord. What in the world does that all mean?